That's right. Buckle up. We got live golf on a Monday, leading you into the first round coverage of the Folds of Honor Collegiate from American Dunes Golf Club. This is the third annual playing of this 54-hole college event for men and women's teams. Coverage continues 4:30 p.m. Eastern right here on Golf Channel.
Welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch. He's Jordan Cornett. We have a big week on tap in golf. Solheim Cup, the biggest team event in women's golf. We also have live college golf, as you just mentioned. Is this all enough to take your mind off your Notre Dame team losing at the weekend?
10 seconds into the show, and you're already bringing up that awful, awful Saturday performance, which reminds me of an emotional return to the desk for both of us, because I heard you struggled on the tennis courts against our Damon Hack. Is that accurate?
It's sobering to realize that you actually suck at all of the country club sports, Jordan. But yeah, I can confess I'm now looking for a tennis instructor to go with the 5,000 golf instructors I've had.
Yeah, I think you should keep your day job here. You do all right at this one, my friend. All right, let's get down to business. Here's what you need to know on this Monday. This week marks the 19th Solheim Cup, which will be played for the first time at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club, making it the second course after Mirfield Village Golf Club to host both the President's Cup and the Solheim Cup. The United States hasn't won a cup since beating Europe 16.5 to 11.5 at Des Moines Golf and Country Club in 2017.
And here is the U.S. team, captained once again by Stacey Lewis. At the bottom there, you see her three captains' picks. The other nine, made it on a combination of points and official rankings. Suzanne Pedersen, the captain on the European side, her team headlined, of course, by Charlie Hull, one of the most reliable performers in this event for her over the last few years and a significant factor in the recent European domination.
Let's go ahead and look back, rewind the clocks at the last three Solheim Cups played. In 2019, Suzanne Pedersen clinched the cup for Europe by winning her singles match over Marina Alex 1-up. She retired from competitive golf after that Solheim Cup performance and victory. Then, of course, in 2021, Europe got it done once again, winning 15-13 at the Inverness Club in Toledo, Ohio, capturing the Solheim Cup in the United States for just the second time. Europe led after every session and officially secured the cup when Matilda Castrin's 1-up win in singles over Lizette Salas got Europe to 14 points. The win was Europe's 7th in 17 Solheim Cups and its 4th in the last 6 playings. And we go to 2023. Europe retained the cup at Finca Cortezin in Spain after the matches ended in a 14-14 tie. It was the first tie in Solheim Cup history, allowing Europe to hold on to the trophy they won in both 2019 and 2021.
And here's the format we'll see this week. The Solheim Cup contested over 5 sessions, 4 of which are team play, 1 individual. Days 1 and 2 are comprised of a morning session of foursome matches, an afternoon session of 4-ball matches, and then, of course, Sunday, the final day of 12 singles matches. And to continue this discussion, it's time now for Golf Today Roundtable, as we welcome in Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols and our colleague Grant Boone, who is on the call this week. Beth Ann, I want to start with you. Stacey Lewis is captain again, as is Suzanne Pedersen. How much pressure do you think Stacey Lewis is feeling in trying to become the, avoid becoming, I should say, the first American captain to lose 2 in a row?
Well, I'm sure Stacey will downplay it, but I know that she's got to be feeling some of that inside when you look at the fact that the Americans haven't won since 2017. But I do think that Stacey's done a great job of really making sure that, first of all, the foundation in the team room is good, the culture is good, that the players, they know what they're playing for. And I think grit is a component that she's talked about that she's felt like they've needed a little bit more of. And I think that played a factor in who she picked.
Grant, as you look at Team Europe here, if you just put them on paper, it feels like America, Team USA has the more talent. And then you look at the results in these last three, and it hasn't gone Team USA's way. Team Europe enters as the underdog. Is that an accurate vibe going into this thing, in your opinion, Grant?
Well, it depends on what your metric is. If you're saying, you know, which team ought to be favored based on team play and recent Solheim Cup performance, absolutely Europe ought to be the favorite. If you're looking at how they stack up individually, which I think is how we've looked at the Ryder Cup in years past and why we've been so surprised that Europe has won so many times, even though Americans have individually been better, then yes, you'd absolutely give the advantage to the Americans. I mean, there's been one European player win on the LPGA Tour this season, and she's not on the team. It's Linnea Ström of Sweden, who came from behind to win the ShopRite LPGA Classic back in June. And you look at the Americans, you got five different winners on the LPGA Tour this year. You got Nelly Korda, far and away number one in the world. I think Lily Avu is a clear number two in the world. They have the advantage, but they have to go out and do it. And by the way, let me just clarify something. Stacey didn't lose last year. It was a tie.
She doesn't have the trophy on her mantelpiece, Grant.
But it was a tie.
It might be a tie, but it still counts as a loss in these kind of team events. Bethan, there's only two rookies on either side here, and I'm curious how you read that. Do you see that as a sign of the depth of talent that's out there, or do you see two captains, one trying not to lose a second time in a row, the other one under an equal amount of pressure, you could say, to try to keep the European streak going? Are they not gambling on inexperience, or do you think they just have a wealth of talent that they can choose from without having to go to too many rookies?
Well, I think there's probably a third factor here in that it was such a short turnaround. You know, we just had the last cup last year, and that's obviously very unusual. And so I think there wasn't as much time for players to make an impact, make an impression, to push themselves onto the team. But I definitely think, you know, in the case of Suzanne Pedersen, she went with some familiarity here. But I think, you know, Lauren Coughlin, she's one of the best players in the world right now, one of the hottest players in the world. So, you know, she was going to be on that team one way or another. And Sarah Schmelzel, when I mentioned grit earlier, that's the player that I was referring to, because Stacey sees a lot of grit in her. And I think that was a big reason that she got on the team. She's extremely passionate and ready to play.
You know, Grant, as you look at these two teams, you can easily point to, okay, the most talented person on each team is the most important piece, but it doesn't always go that way. When you look at Team USA, you look at Team Europe, who's the most important player on both sides?
You know, I would say on the American side, I'm going to look at Lexi Thompson. She's the most experienced player on the U.S. team. She's one of only two Americans to have been part of a winning Solheim Cup team. She's just done that on a couple of occasions. The other is Allison Lee, who hasn't played on a Solheim Cup in 9 years. Lexi last year was given really the ball, if you want to look at another sports analogy, by Stacey Lewis. She was asked to play a lot, hadn't played much in the summer of last year, played a lot leading into the Solheim Cup. She hit the very first shot of the Solheim Cup. She was really good. She went 3-1 last year in Spain, and she hit really one poor shot in 3 days. But she was a big reason why the U.S. Tied Europe 14 apiece, and this is her swan song. And it would not surprise me in the least if Lexi had a Suzanne Pedersen moment, and a walk-off type moment at RTJ. And for the European side, I'm going to go with Leona Maguire. I mean, Leona, to me, has ascended to those ranks if you want to look at a Ryder Cup analogy of an Ian Poulter, before that, Colin Montgomery. She wants the ball. Good luck trying to bench Leona Maguire. You might get decked. I mean, she wants to play every match. She has played every match. She's been brilliant each time. She hasn't, like most of the European players, other than Esther Henselite, she really hasn't been playing great. But when it's Solheim Cup time, she finds a way.
Following up on that, Bethan, both Rose Zhang and Lily Avu are very prominent members of this team. They didn't have a great outing last year in the Solheim Cup. Do you think they feel a little bit of extra incentive and or a little bit of extra pressure to deliver what's expected of them given their stature this time around?
I absolutely do. I think that these are two players that, you know, when you're in the top 10 in the world, you're expected to deliver. And I think it's going to be a really tall mountain to climb for Team USA if these two don't have a better showing. And when you talk to players, you know, toward the end of their career, you know, their record matters. You know, it matters deeply to them. And obviously neither one of them have been on a winning Solheim Cup team, and they'll be looking to turn that around.
Grant, it's always a sport in team events like this. We see it in the Ryder Cup as well, when the second guessing begins. And sometimes you can actually start to identify where that second guessing is coming from early. I'm curious about a couple of Suzanne Pedersen's captain's picks in Albin Valenzuela and Emily Pedersen, neither of whom have been playing particularly well at all recently. Now, Emily played well last time out in the Solheim Cup. Is there a danger that Suzanne is doing what we've seen a lot of team captains do in the past, and perhaps over-investing in the form the last time this event was played rather than what the individual has done since then?
Well, I think if she was going to do that, she would have picked someone like Gemma Drybera again, or maybe Caroline Hedwall, who was so brilliant last year. I mean, when she picked Hedwall and Pedersen, it turned a lot of heads, but in reality, Caroline Hedwall had been playing brilliantly in Europe, and Emily Pedersen was a top three ball striker on the LPGA Tour at the time that she was picked. Pedersen has fallen back in that category and really has struggled for most of this year. Albin has flirted a couple of times, including in Thailand earlier this year. She finished second to Patty Tavitanik at the LPGA event there. Albin was right there on that bubble last year and wasn't picked. I really think, Eamon, as you look at Suzanne's options, as opposed to Stacey's, and to your point earlier, there weren't a lot of candidates who had really elbowed their way to the front of the line. There weren't a lot of great candidates. I mean, you could look at Bronte Law maybe and say how she had played on the LET. I thought she probably, I know she got a strong look by Suzanne. I just don't think there were an overabundance of European players playing at a high level when you compare that, for example, to an Angel Yin, who in her last two starts had a second and a 10th place finish, with the 10th being at St. Andrews at the AIG Women's Open. I think Stacey had a lot more options at her disposal, players who were playing well, than Suzanne did.
Bethan, Grant just mentioned Angel Yin. She missed by one spot in the points criteria to make Stacey Lewis's team. She also missed by one spot in the world ranking to make the team. Is there a case she should be on this team, and that maybe one of the other captains' picks Stacey went with had less of a case to be there?
Well, I definitely think that raised a few eyebrows, especially when you look at recency bias. But she also broke an ankle during the offseason and wasn't able to compete for quite a large part of the beginning of the season. So there was a smaller body of work to look at. I also think that Stacey looks at the old course at St. Andrews, even though she won there, and says, hey, that's probably not going to be a whole lot like what we're going to see here this week. I also think team chemistry matters. I think that when you look at who Stacey picked in terms of veteran players that even the rookies that have, they blend well with the team that she already had in place. It's a very mature team, and I think that that she just blends well in the team room, which you could say the same thing for Emily Pedersen and in Suzanne's pick. You know, that was a lot about the team room as well. She loves her fire.
Whole lot more to discuss here. We'll take a quick break. Beth Ann, don't go anywhere. Grant, don't go anywhere. More on Golf Today and our roundtable when we return.
And let's continue our roundtable discussion with the co-hosts of the Big Pickle podcast, Beth Ann Nichols, Grant Boone. Grant, 12 players on each team. What's your dream pairing that you want to see? Not necessarily saying you're going to get it. What's the one that you think would make the most noise on either side?
Are you saying a team within a team or like a singles match?
A team within a team or a singles match, actually. What head-to-head battle or partnership do you think would make most noise this week?
Well, we got Leona Maguire versus Rose Zhang last year in Spain, and that featured the two players who had been at the top of the world amateur rankings longer than anyone, and Leona got the better of Rose that day. I would love to see Lexi go out against Anna Nordqvist in singles. They have had some epic matches. That, to me, is my dream scenario. I still think they played one of the greatest cup team, head-to-head matches you'll ever see. If you're aware of Google, go enter 2017 Des Moines Country Club Solheim Cup and watch Lexi versus Anna Nordqvist. Lexi lost the first four holes. Julie Inkster came out to get her and said, and I'll paraphrase, get it together. And Lexi did. She holed out for eagle at the 11th hole, and it took a near hole out from the fairway by Anna Nordqvist on the 18th just to get half a point. It was brilliant. So Lexi in what's going to be her last Solheim Cup. Anna probably will be her final. They've been together so many times. They were a couple of years ago as well. Let's see Anna and Lexi.
Well, Beth Ann, I wasn't posed the question from my buddy Eamon here, so I'll go ahead and answer. I'd throw Nelly Korda in there with anybody else just because world's number one is always fascinating to watch. Expectations for world's number one entering the Solheim Cup, Beth Ann?
Goodness, it's been the tale of two seasons for Nelly Korda when you look at those six victories in the first half of the year and then the crazy things that unfolded at the U.S. Women's Open and the KPMG Women's PGA. And then she had two good chances to win a gold medal and then to win at the Old Course and just couldn't get it done, couldn't get it over the finish line with more rare miscues. And so, you know, I think this could be a time for her to, you know, kind of reshape the conversation around her golf game right now. If she could get some clutch putts to fall and win some key matches and get that mojo back to get back in the winner's circle to continue the epic season.
Grant, does a Nelly Korda or Alexi Thompson present a kind of an unexpected difficulty for Stacey Lewis? Because they're both such iconic figures. And for all of their peers, there is an intimidation factor that comes with players like that. And we've seen it over the years in the Ryder Cup where a guy like, say, a Nick Faldo wasn't necessarily the easiest guy to pair, certainly not with any of the rookies or younger team members. Do you think that applies with Alexi or Nelly, that Stacey has to be very judicious in who she partners big personalities like that with?
I don't, only because both of them are not what I would call alpha females. How would we call it? What would we say? They're not the Faldo personality in terms of being brusque. I mean, you know, there was the story that the only people who didn't like Faldo more than the American Ryder Cup team was the European Ryder Cup team. But Faldo was just that singular type figure. They loved him, by the way, when he delivered points, as he always did. But with Lexi and Nelly, they're easy to play with. And I think we get into some interesting strategy here, because while there may be some difference of opinion depending on who's sending those teams out, most of the people I talk to, and I'm going to lean on Karen Stupples, who's going to be part of the call this weekend with us, who is a terrific match play player and just helped Katrina Mathieu win the Curtis Cup for GB and I. Karen always says she likes, and I trust Karen, she likes similar styles to play best ball, and she likes different styles to play foursomes, because in best ball, the reverse. Foursomes, you want similar styles because you're used to playing from that spot already. Two big hitters, send them out in foursomes. Whereas in best ball, let's get the differing styles. So with Nelly, you could see her, for example, with someone like an Andrea Lee, who's a terrific putter, not as long of a hitter, is going to hit a ton of fairways. Whereas, you know, when it comes to four ball, maybe you'd see Nelly with someone like Lexi. Can you imagine Nelly and Lexi going out in four ball I guess that'd be the reverse. You'd put the four ball. Can you see how confusing this is already? 4 days to get ready for this. But Lexi, you'd see someone like Lexi and Nelly in a foursomes match because their games are so similar. Four ball, you'd put Lexi or a Nelly with an Andrea Lee. I think that's going to be fascinating to watch. Let's see what Stacey does. Last year, she put Lexi Thompson out first with Megan Kang, and they won their foursomes match. So we'll see what she does here.
Beth Ann, I just read your fascinating article about the first Solheim Cup back in 1990. And what stood out to me is you're talking about legends in the game and the nerves that came with stepping up to the first tee and just simply performing for their country, but also the evolution, the growth of the Solheim Cup to where we are now. Can you give us a little bit of background on that article and going back to 1990 Solheim Cup to where we are today, bracing ourselves for another fun watch coming up?
You know, I think the most remarkable thing is that the Solheim Cup was first broached with the Solheims in January of 1990, and it came together in less than a year. And so everything was so last minute, from finding the venue to finding volunteers. They only had 100 volunteers. You know, some people say there were as little as a dozen fans on that first tee outside of those who are somehow involved in the tournament. You know, for the week, they say maybe 1,000 fans total came out to Lake Nona, which is just mind-blowing. But I also think it's important to note that the Solheims, when the LPGA came to the Solheim family initially, they asked them for a two-event commitment. And John Solheim went back to his parents and said, you know, I'm concerned that if this is a success in a couple of years, that they're just going to, you know, take it off to someone else. And so it was Louise Solheim who said, I think we should make a 10 event commitment. And so I just can't say enough of the vision that the Solheim family had, that this was going to be a success when you look at those lopsided teams in the beginning, and to put that kind of a commitment into this event that has really become the showcase of the LPGA.
Really has been remarkable growth over the years, and so many compelling storylines to dig into this week. And it's still only Monday. Bethan, Grant, thanks for checking in with us. We look forward to talking to you as the week goes on.
Okay.
Thank you.
One of three potential names, and Solheim Cup is what they landed on. I love it. Stay with us. College Golf, back on Golf Channel. We're getting you set for a full fall slate. Steve Borkowski joins us with a preview on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. Let's flash back to May and the NCAA D1 Men's Golf Championship at Omni La Costa. The Auburn Tigers defeated Florida State to win the chip for the first time in school history. The victory marked Auburn's 10th tourney victory of the 23-24 season.
And on the women's side, number one seed Stanford defeated number six seed UCLA to win the Women's Golf National Championship. The victory was the Cardinals' second title in the last 3 years and their third since taking their first title back in 2015.
College golf is back and in full swing, and we've got you covered with a ton of it. A full slate of events coming this fall on Golf Channel right in front of you there, picking up end of September all the way through to mid-November. And as you can see, this week marks the Folds of Honor Collegiate, played at American Dunes Golf Club, a Jack Nicklaus signature golf course in Grand Haven, Michigan, along the coast of Lake Michigan. Coverage continues 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
And here's what you need to know about the Folds of Honor Collegiate. Third edition of the event, 22 different colleges and universities are represented here, including the defending men's champions, Jordan's alma mater, Notre Dame, so they can win something, Jordan. On the call for us this week is our colleague, Steve Borkowski. Steve, this has been an interesting event over the last few years, constantly evolving. There are some changes for this year as well. What do we need to know?
By the way, that's a cheap shot. You can't let Jordan know that Northern Illinois won on Saturday. Fair enough. That's fair. But when you come to this place, American Dunes, you guys sort of outlined it. Just the third plane, but some of the changes, including the women this year. We had 3 hours of coverage with the ladies. We'll have 3 hours this afternoon with the men. So you've got 30 teams, 15 from each respective side. But when you come here, we know it's the kickoff of the fall campaign. You guys just showed the highlights from La Costa. 8.5 months from now, we'll be doing it all again. So this is an opportunity for schools with a lot of newcomers to get a sense what these fresh faces are all about, or teams that maybe are veteran-laden to get off to a good opportunity with a win here this week like the Notre Dame men did a year ago. But when you arrive on this property, a couple of days I have been here, it's much more than golf. It's about perspective, inspiration. Think of any powerful word. It truly applies to what Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney and Jack Nicklaus have collaborated with this golf course, with this tournament, and realizing, guys, in the big picture, golf has some value, but considering what those have done for this to even be possible, because as they say here, freedom is not free. So many do so many wonderful and powerful things. The sacrifices that have been made. I believe all the men and women that leave here after Wednesday and the competition's done, they'll have a different perspective moving forward.
I certainly co-sign that, Burko. Okay, leaning into the men's side of things as we brace ourselves for this full slate of collegiate golf, who's the men's team to focus in on this season?
You know, Jordan, I think it's the team you just showed the highlights of from this past May at Omni La Costa, the Auburn Tigers. You referenced the 10 wins they had a season ago. The majority of their players are back, led by Jackson Coyvan, the National Freshman of the Year, Player of the Year from this past season. Brendan Valdez has had a strong, solid summer. And then you add Billy Davis, the freshman to join the Auburn Tigers, the twin brother of Anna Davis, who's already there on the plains. I think they're going to be a big target squarely on their back. But if Auburn slips up, you could take a look at a team like Florida State, the runner-up to the Auburn Tigers at those NCAAs. Luke Clanton, we have all watched in really amazement the success he's had on the PGA Tour this year. Will he continue that form over to back to the collegiate ranks? We will wait and find out. And then maybe Arizona State. They've already got a win over the weekend in the Pacific Northwest, led by arguably the best 1-2 punch in the country in Preston Summerhays and Jose Le Ballester, who won the U.S. Amateur this past summer. It's the fun dynamic of this point of the year, guys, because when I say in September, maybe 48% of it will pan out come May.
Well, I guess same question, Berko, on the women's side. What team do you expect to make some noise this season?
Aiming the same thing that you showed as well, the Stanford Cardinal. The days of Rose Zhang and Rachel Heck, that's gone for the Cardinal and head coach Ann Walker. But they have arguably the greatest freshman recruiting class in the history of women's golf coming in. You add that to Paula Martin, San Pedro, Kelly Sue, and Megha Gane. I think all title tracks go through the folks in Palo Alto, but we know it's easier said than done. A great team in September doesn't mean you win it all come May. And if not, the squad we saw here this morning, the Texas Longhorns, preseason ranked number 2, first-year head coach Laura Iannello, left Arizona, now in Austin, and the team she has inherited is good as any in the country, 1-5, led by their two super sophomores, Lauren Kim and Farah O'Keefe. So just a few of the early favorites, but trust me, come the end of the fall, early spring, there's going to be a team outside the top 10 now that will work their way into the conversation, and I think that's why we love it so much.
Well, Berko, you said 48% we can count on. We truly believe we got the good 48% here in this segment, so we appreciate you setting the table. Sun's shining down on you, so it looks like a good day for golf. We'll see you at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. Thank you, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.